Welcome to Fermentality. I'm your host, Kat Pierce with Atlantic Brew Supply, and we're homebrewers talking homebrew and sharing fermentation. All right. Well, welcome, Brett, to Fermentality. I really appreciate you taking the time and coming to chat with us about fermentation and more specifically Brettanomyces. So, Brett, tell us a little bit about yourself and how long you've been shopping with Atlantic Brew Supply.
Well, a little bit myself. Doesn't take people very long to realize that I'm not from around these parts. And I'm originally from New Zealand, and I've been shopping here at Atlantic Brew Supply since it first opened. Because as soon as it opened here, it was a lot more convenient for me to come here for my home brew supply. So this has been my shop since it opened.
Excellent. Well, we definitely appreciate the amount of time that you've spent with us. And it's really cool getting to know folks that have been here longer than I have. Atlantic Brew Supply has been here for 10 years. As of, I guess, a week ago, we just had our 10-year anniversary. So it's very exciting to specifically be chatting with somebody that has...
Where was my invitation?
Yeah. Well, you know what? It was all over social media. So where were you at, Brett?
Clearly, I'm too old for social media.
So, my first question for you today, Brett, is how did you get started homebrewing? And what was it specifically about the hobby that made it stick for you? You know, obviously, hobbies are sometimes fleeting for people where they get started and they're like, eh, this isn't really for me. But what was it specifically about homebrewing that got you started and stuck for you?
Well, that's a good story, actually. I resisted it for a long time, but as you can see, we've got a beer on the table here staring us in the face.
Yes.
It's going, open me, open me. So I think we should not be talking about beer unless we have a beer. So this beer here, there's a story about that coming along down the pike as well. But I think we should open it to start with. And I've got two objects on the table, a pair of scissors, in a tri-clamp. Which would you prefer me to open that with?
Well, you know, generally when I have a beer in front of me, I am typically using a beer opener, but I am very excited to see you using something other than a beer opener for this.
Well, that's because way back in my college days, me and a bunch of mates decided that we would never again use a bottle opener, and we swore to each other that from now on in, we would use everything but a bottle opener. So since then, I've stayed true to it, and I'm not going to tell you how long that is. It's an awful long time, but I've had a lot of practice over the years. I've opened them with shovels and even a chainsaw. But,
oh, good Lord.
So this is going to be pretty easy. As long as you watch, it'll fail on me this first time.
And I am very excited to watch, and I will narrate for anybody that is watching or listening. So you're using the screw part of a tri-clamp to open this. It looks like, oh my goodness. That was so quick and fast. Holy cow. I am very impressed. So Brett, it is no secret that you are specifically very excited about Brettanomyces. So... you know, it's Brett talking about Brett. Is this beer, in fact, a Brett beer, other than the fact that Brett brewed it?
Yes, it is. It is made with that. And this was one of my fail beers. It was an equipment fail of my own making. I thought that my fermentation fridge broke, and I thought I'd make a new one out of a Peltier device, and I built like a little chamber. And I brewed beer on the day, and I didn't get to test it ahead of time. So I put the beer in to ferment, and the damn Peltier thing wasn't worth a darn. I found out if you need that, you need like to have like multiple Peltier devices, and the little one that I had in there did no cooling whatsoever. So this beer got over temperature, and it was it was going to be called Heavy Seas, mm-hmm. My own seas, all seas. So it was sea hops. It had Cascade, Citra, and Centennial in it. And it was great, but fermentation, just the temperature got too high.
And it had some, a little too estery.
Yeah, it had some off flavors, and I'm just like, yeah, no, I'm not going to serve this to any of my mates. So I did what I do with so many beers that if I'm not particularly happy with them, what I do is I chuck them into a carboy with some Brett Amices and let Brett fix it, is what I say. So
let Brett fix it. Brett fixes it with Brett.
That's right. I got so many Brett fix beers, but if you smell that, can you smell
the aroma? Is incredible. This aroma specifically for me, definitely like horsehair, farmhouse, you know, absolutely like
that barnyard. I mean, people have got all sorts of names that they call that, you know, sweaty saddle and barnyard, wet blanket. But I don't know, it's way nicer than all of those things. But, you know, you've got like wet hay and some of those things, which is a little bit nicer way of putting it.
Yeah, hay is typically the way that I perceive it. Ah, your aroma is incredible. I'm going to actually start drinking this.
Well, so you should. Yeah, cheers.
Cheers, sir. Cheers. Oh, wow.
So this then fermented over a period of about 6 months before I bottled it. And it's been in the bottle now for just a bit over a year too. So, but you can see it comes out really, really clean. It's a bit, this has got a haze on it. But
very clean. And I mean, even just looking at it, the clarity is very brilliant. The carbonation on it is wonderful. And the head just is long lasting, but it's like that very fine head, almost nitro-like, which to me is beautiful. This is very well done. I mean, I know that it was an accident, but...
No, the beer wasn't an accident. No, the beer was on purpose. I knew that this would, you know, I know Brett fixes stuff. But strangely enough, you know, the original Brett and Amices, you know, people talk about IPAs, and the history of IPA was that the Brits would ship their beer, they put them into barrels, they upped the alcohol a bit, they packed it with hops, and then they stuck them in barrels and then shipped it off, and it took like 4 months or so, and they had to cross the equator twice to get to India. Yeah, so during that time, it's like got all sorts of temperature, and it's in barrels, and barrels were notorious for containing things like Brett. And so when the beer got there, they described the beer that was this IPA as being sparkling. And there's no way that that didn't have bread.
You know, I never thought about the story of IPA in that way, but it makes total sense that there would be something within those barrels that would, I mean, for all practical purposes, contaminate the beer, right? And so I could definitely understand as a result of that story why you look at Brett as being the fix for a beer that might not have gone as planned.
Well, I mean, in India, they loved it. And as I say, it was sparkling. They used to call it sometimes sparkling India Pale Ale. And that. And that's why, because it, you know, Brett along the way, because imagine, you know, anything sitting in a barrel, a manky old barrel for 4 months, you're going to go, ooh, I don't know about that. But when it got there, that's what they said. It's sparkling. And so that's the thing about Brett. It's also, we should be talking about what Brett is. Brett Amices means, it's from Greek, which means British fungus.
British fungus.
Yep.
Okay.
It's British fungus, and it's actually a non-spore-forming fungus. There's two types. There's a spore-forming one, and there's a non-spore-forming, and this is the other one. The Dicera that I often is used as an alternate term for it is actually pretty rare. So it's actually the non-spore-forming one that is most prevalent that they use here. And whereas Saccharomyces, which is your primary fermentation yeast, sort of grows rapidly and eats everything that it can until it either runs out of food or becomes into toxic because it's too much alcohol. Brett sort of works a whole lot slower. And anything that the sac doesn't eat, Brett will come along and eat it. It's quite capable of eating up much longer chain sugars. And so that's also why you have to be careful when you're doing it, because if you might have a final gravity of, say, you know, 10, we'll say, with a beer, and then you bottle that with some Brett in it, well, then you can drop that all the way down to like zero. The Brett will eat all the remaining sugars, and then you can have bottle bombs going on.
Oh, good Lord.
Yeah, especially, yeah, because I mean,
do you have any experience with bottle bombs?
Not from using Brett, because I usually let them ferment right out before I do. But, you know, I have had before. I had a porter that had one. They're really unpleasant, because when I looked at this, it was, fortunately, I keep all my beer when I'm bottle fermenting them in like a plastic container. I heard this thing go off and...
So you were there when it happened.
First time I thought I heard something in the background, but I lost two of these. And anyway, the bottle, the bits of the bottle were everything from big chunks right the way down to just about glass dust. And I'm going, man, if you were holding that in your hand, that could have done a lot of damage or taken out an eye or God knows what. So don't underestimate bottle bombs. And if you're using Brett, be very careful about your fermentation because it will keep on eating all those remaining sugars that are in there. So that's something to watch out for.
Summer is here, and what a better way to embrace the warm weather than by brewing your own delicious beer. Thanks to Atlantic Brew Supply's Summer 10 campaign, you can take your homebrewing skills to the next level. Are you a fan of the Fermentality podcast? We have an exclusive offer just for you. Get ready for a refreshing 10% off discount on all of your brewing supplies when you use the special code BRETT10 at checkout. But hurry, this offer is only valid for a limited time each month. Make sure to tune in to our latest episode of Fermentality and grab your unique code as soon as it drops. With Atlantic Brew Supply, your summer brewing adventures are just a sip away.
With regards to Brett, you know, since we're on that topic now, you know, one of the things that one of the styles that I currently have been working on is like a Red Flanders. Now, the Red Flanders, I use the Roselar blend, which does have a little bit of Brett in, but it also has like Pediococcus and Acetobacter and, you know, just kind of like a whole blend of really nice bugs. You know, there have been multiple people who have come to me and given me advice on ways to essentially feed it to make those flavors really pronounced. Brett isn't always sour, though. So if you really want a really nice Brett character, what are you looking at feeding it in order to bring that character more forward?
Well, depends if you're doing a primary fermentation with it or if you're using it as a secondary. I mean, the flavors, I mean, it expresses these two primary ones. And I'm trying to remember my chemistry now. It's called like 4-ethyl propylene or and then propanol. No, 4. Anyway, it's 4-EP.
Mm-hmm.
We'll just shorten that. Scientists can correct me on that one. And then the other one is 4-ethyl guaiacanol or guaiac, something like that, 4-EG.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them produces sort of more of the horse blankety stuff. And the other one is more of the pineapple-y notes that you're getting like out of this.
Yeah.
And so it really depends on which of those esters it's actually expressing. But Brett can make things tart. If you let oxygen in, which like in a barrel, and when you're making your Flanders, if you let oxygen get into it, the Brett will produce, it will actually consume some alcohol and some sugars and make that, you know, acetic acid.
Yeah, and that's what I heard where, you know, everyone was like, oh, Kat, stop feeding it sugar. Like the sugar is definitely going to help, but what's really going to help it is oxygen. And, you know, coming from the beginning part of homebrewing where everyone's like, don't give it oxygen, don't give it oxygen. And then someone saying, no, this time give it oxygen. That to me just like blew my mind. And so hearing from you saying that oxygen is actually what helps that, is there a particular point in which you would start to expose it? Or is it essentially okay for even to just be open fermentation?
I don't know. I've never tried to do one of those in an open fermentation. And normally in a barrel, the barrel actually lets a little bit of oxygen in through right. The barrel, and you get a little bit of that coming into the barrel. And then usually what it is so that if you've got Brett in the barrel and things like that, you want to control the amount, or a lot of people want to control the amount of acetic acid production. I'm one that's not a huge fan of acetic acid production, but in a style like a Flanders, then, you know, that's one of your aims. Although, again, it doesn't have to be. It's just that has become synonymous with
right.
Your Flanders and what have you in the Oud Bruins and things like that. Again, it's this balance you've got to do then with controlling the amount of oxygen, because if you put too much oxygen, it'll create like large amounts of acetic acid, and now you'll be drinking balsamic.
Yeah, balsamic vinegar is not necessarily what I want.
Well, I got a good buddy that absolutely loves it. The more vinegary, the better. And I'm like, oh, man.
In regards to my food, I'm totally down for all of the vinegar, especially if it comes to, you know, collard greens or turnip greens or you know,
you must barbecue. Be a girl from the South.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was born and raised in the South and in North Carolina.
So was I.
Well, you,
the South, the way far
true
south.
South. Below the equator, South. Yeah, I know. Southern North America, you know, and for me, my barbecue is definitely not the tomato or a ketchup based. I am all for all of the vinegar. Give me all of the vinegar. But yeah, so, you know, we touched on Brettanomyces and more specifically about your knowledge of Brettanomyces. And we'll definitely dig further into that. But I'm really curious, what exactly was it about homebrewing that got you started? And more specifically, like, once you got into homebrewing, did you always know that you wanted to explore Brettanomyces? And is that why you got in? Or was it something completely different?
Well, my brewing process took two stages. When I was back in college, because we were poor, I brewed homebrew then, but it was horrible stuff. Your malt came in like a can, and then you had to add sugar. The yeast was in like a little thing taped to the outside. And then we put sanitation. I don't even remember doing anything in terms of much in the way of sanitation. And it showed. The beer was horrible. Yeah, we put it into a closet with a light bulb to make it go faster. If it was bubbling faster, that was better. We knew nothing about it. No one read any books on it. We just all did this, and it was awful stuff. But you know, we were poor, and it cost next to nothing. And so we'd go, after about the third one, it's getting better. But no, it was not better. And so over the years, I've tried different people's home brews, and this friend of mine was always on me, you should try home brewing. And I'm like, yeah, nah, I don't think so. I mean, I've had home brews, and they all taste like crap. And so I resisted it for the longest time, and then I was down at the beach one time, and one of my friend's sons had given him some homebrew, and he said, you want to try some of Brian's homebrew? And I'm like, if I have to.
Sure,
I'll
taste it. Let's
Brian's
see.
Homebrew, I popped the top of it, and he had an IPA, and I swear to God, this thing was better than Stone, which was one of my favorite brews at the time. I'm like, you're kidding me, this is homebrew?
How
I'm like,
did this
no.
happen?
And then he had a porter, and I was like, oh my God, this is so. And then so I immediately got back to my mate that had been doing it. He goes, I told you. And so we started researching equipment, because he had got rid of all his equipment. And then I kind of don't do anything by half. And at the time, there was, what was the name of that? It was a three vessel brew rig thing that you could buy, but it was about $6,000. So I thought I'll just make one. And so I started getting some kegs. We went around to places and got some kegs that I was going to convert into keggles, because brewing equipment when I got started was nosebleed expensive. I
mean, it's still nosebleed
expensive. I'm talking like, $350 for maybe a 5-gallon stainless steel kettle.
Good
that
Lord.
Had no fittings on it whatsoever. It was just a kettle, just a plain kettle. So, I'm like, well, that's out of my budget, just that alone. So anyway, I collected things. We bought people that had vestige kegs that someone hadn't come and picked up for a long time. He says, I just want to get them out of here. And, you give me the deposit, I paid for them, and you can take them. So we weren't stealing kegs. We paid for them. They were abandoned. The distributors weren't going and picking them up. So, and they'd been there for ages, the guy said. So anyway, I started doing that and welding these all up. And that's kind of what I did. And I just, I got a process control background. And this just to me seemed like something I had to do. So I built this big old rig. I started out, when I first did it, I guess, I didn't have the rig with all the gas burners and everything put on it. So we just used a turkey fryer to heat things. I just knew I was going to do it. As soon as I started doing it, I'm like, yeah, I'm hooked. Yeah.
Wow. So, you talk about equipment from where you started. What is the equipment now that you use? I mean, I know you were talking about barrels more specifically. Do you ferment with barrels?
No, I don't use barrels, actually. My brew rig is the one I still made. I upgraded the boil kettle for it, so it's got a tangential input and it's bigger and whatever. It's a stainless steel one that I bought online a few years back. But other than that, I've still got all the other kegels, and I can make about, on average, 45-litre batches, which is 12 gallons or so. But if I want to make something smaller, just to sort of experiment and what have you, I can still do it on that. So I still use that for my brewing system. But to fill a barrel, even with my 45 litres at a time, I've got to brew like 5 batches of beer.
Yeah.
And, you know, you kind of need to fill it all in once and that. So I don't do that. But what I do have is I've got a number of regular half barrel kegs. And so I just have a whole bunch of those that I do with various different experimentations for some of my sours and what have you. And I can control in there too. We were talking before about oxygen. And I can control it because I'm not a big fan of acetic acid in my beers. And especially right. when I'm making like a, you know, something with a lactic acid bacteria. Again, I want to control that. And so I can introduce oxygen if I want to. I can just stick a wand down it and squirt a bit of oxygen and give me just the right amount. It could be just the right amount of tart if I want a little bit of that. Otherwise, if I don't, I can, you know, I cannot do it all together. It's, I don't know if you've ever heard of a guy called Vinny Chalurzo from Russian River. He's also not a fan of
sour
of the acetic side of things. And he tries to keep them out of most of his beers. And he does quite a few fermentations in stainless, except he's got a bigger budget in mind. He only can do the big stainless tanks and stuff. So that's why I've kind of steered clear of barrels. Plus then, not only that, but then I've got to have this big thing that takes up room and space. So I've got to brew like 5 batches for it. And then if it doesn't come out quite right, well, I've got 250 liters of stuff I don't like.
Yeah, 100%
so,
true.
So, you know.
I mean, there are like smaller barrels that you can go out and get, but if you're not a big fan of the acetic and you do not want to expose it to as much oxygen, then I 100% understand why you focus on stainless. What about plastic?
No, I don't use plastic.
Yeah.
I mean, some people do, and they have quite a lot of success with it, but I just don't believe in plastic. But the smaller barrels, the problem with them is they have much thinner staves, and so they're more likely... much more susceptible to getting more oxygen through them. So smaller barrels, you know, that's why the big ones, you know, bigger breweries and that use the bigger puncheons, you know, that are more like 650 liters, you know, much bigger barrel. I should really be talking in gallons, but I never can remember all of the gallon stuff. You'll catch up one day.
Yeah, we'll catch on. What is one piece of equipment that you cannot live without?
A fermenter fridge.
Okay.
A fermenter fridge. If you are fermenting, you absolutely have to have temperature control. That's kind of like of everything else, you can sort of wing it with that. But people that don't use temperature control, you're going to end up with a lot of unexpected results. Which case is not bad. You can always turn around and bread it like I do with these things. But. But if you really want good reliability, and you've got to be able to control the temperature in your fermentation. So of everything else, you can make do with a lot of other things, you know, plastic buckets and still a little boil kettle, all that. But you got to have a fermenter fridge.
I 100% understand that. You know, for me, I recently, well, not recently, I guess within the past couple of years, got a fridge that I specifically use for fermentation. But I unfortunately also use it as my serving fridge. So I need to maybe potentially get like 2 separates, but this one is a fridge that was on sale from a pharmaceutical company out in Research Triangle Park. And this was a fridge that they used to like store whatever, like bacteria, whatever it is that they were growing. And it went out of spec and they couldn't get it back into spec. And spec for them is like 0.2% of a degree, you know. And for me, I'm going, if it's within 1 or 2 degrees, I'm good. So I bought this for like on the cheap. The only issue, and I don't think this would be an issue for you considering where you're from, but the only issue for me is I'm used to freedom units, aka Fahrenheit, and this fridge only reads in Celsius. And so,
perfect.
So consistently, I'm having to do the the conversions, and I'm going.
Just fermented 20C, and you're good to go.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's 68 in Fahrenheit. Yeah, in freedom units, right?
If that's what you want to call them.
So that's the only issue So that's the only issue that I have with it. But thankfully, my fiance, he works in pharmaceuticals and he's a mechanical engineer. So like he's able to help me out with that kind of thing. But yeah, I mean, you know, temperature control is everything. For me, one of the things that I've always told people that is my absolute favorite piece of equipment that I couldn't live without is my spray bottle. I cannot live without my spray bottle of Star Sand, just because it makes everything so much more convenient. So we're talking about Brettanomyces, you know, and there are multiple different styles of beer that incorporate Brettanomyces. What is your favorite style of beer with Brettanomyces?
I like this one here, where I've taken, basically this was a pale ale, and what the bread will do is it actually produces really interesting, it expresses really interesting flavors out of it. You get notes of pineapple and fruitiness and some things like that that come out of it. So if you add things which are high in polyphenols into it in the first place, things like which are hopped, you know, hops have lots of polyphenols in it. The bread comes along and chomps on those, and it almost tastes like you've got fruit in them. So as far as a Brett beer goes, you know, taking like a pale ale, take a good pale ale recipe, hop it up and all of that, and the Brett will finish that off and then create this funky, fruity beer. So for funky ones, I like that. I've done some other experiments in that with lactic acid bacteria, PDO, and that. Lactobacillus is a little one-dimensional for me. I like more complex ones, you know, like PDO will give. But when you're using PDO, you actually have to use bread as well, because PDO produces quite a large amount of diacetyl. So unless you want buttered popcorn tasting beer, you have to add bread in to help mitigate that, so it helps cleans it up. So the two of them work in unison over that. So bread also is excellent in the control for your lactic acid beers. So you need it there too. You need it everywhere.
Absolutely. So with that discussion about PDO and it pairing with Brettanomyces, what is your experience with other bacteria and/or bugs essentially? How do you use them in conjunction with one another? Like what is your advice to somebody who has never used bacteria in beer, that wants to try and start essentially getting into Brettanomyces and or a PDO or Acetobacter or anything like that?
Well, you have to be patient for a start. None of those act in a hurry. I mean, you can make a batch of beer in a few weeks, but when you're talking about lactic acid bacteria, they take months, and you know, and PDO is even slower, really. Takes a long time. So you need to have a vessel that you're quite happy with something sitting in. You know, a glass carboy will do it. As I say, I prefer the half barrel stainless ones. That's a nice size vessel that, you know, you can sit in the corner of a room. And then when you do, your beer is a lot simpler, because you make like a mash that you're not trying to highly attenuate. You want to have lots of bugs and lots of food for the bugs, so that it can take a nice long time to ferment, and it should do it really slowly. You know, probably after a year, you're probably still only down to maybe, you know, 10-10 or something like that in terms of your final gravity. So it's really slow. But you can just start with really basic ingredients, and you don't need to do, you know, long boils and all of that sort of stuff. You just make a polyphenol rich environment for your bugs to eat up. And then you just toss them in and let them go. They do the rest, you know.
And forget about them.
Well, you know, that's what they say. They say brewers make wort and yeast makes beer.
Yes.
And in this case, you know, you give it some basic food. You want it to be a rough and ready. And then you toss in, you know, the thing, and you just leave it up to them. Like, okay, guys, off you go. See you in a year.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, for me, I am the epitome of a person with lack of patience. Right. And so I, like I said before, I have this Flanders Red or Red Flanders. And I've set it aside, but essentially I remember the person that helped me make this, he was a previous store associate here at Atlantic Brew Supply, and he was saying, you know, hey, so if you want the Roselar blend from Y Yeast to really work nicely for your Red Flanders, it's probably best that you make one beer with it, you know, just a basic style beer, and then you rack the beer off of that and then use that same cake, like the yeast cake and the bug cake for another beer, and you rack the next one on top of it. And I was going, are you kidding me? Like, I have to sit here and wait 3 months for this first one even to sit on top of this cake. And then now I have to put another one on and I have to wait a whole other year for this. This is ridiculous. Like, I'm so used to, you know, for ales, at least 2 to 3 weeks, and then a lager, you know, 6 to 8 weeks. And I'm sitting here going, you're telling me it's going to take me a year for this? It's driving me insane. I'm still waiting on this, and hopefully it'll be ready by October. My favorite beer style ever is a Flanders Red, and which is why I'm making it for my wedding. And so I am also in the same mindset of, well, what if it doesn't turn out the way I want it? And then it was a year for naught. Have you ever, I know that, you know, you specifically have spoken to using Brett to kind of save a beer, right? But have you ever had an experience where you made a beer and it needed to sit there for a year and then it didn't turn out the way you wanted? How did you feel? Like,
oh, it breaks my heart to have to waste beer, that's for sure. But Brett can't fix everything. There's a couple of things. One of the things I will warn people about is if ever you do a crash chill, make sure you watch out for the contracting headspace, because that will suck up the liquid. And so I'd had this thing and I blew it off, and I could remote control my fridge, my fermentation fridge. So I thought, oh, good, I'll get this thing going now. But I forgot it's still connected into my blow-off tubes, connected into the Mankey water with it, even though it's got star sand in it, it's been sitting in there for a while. And so as you chill that down, the headspace contracts and it just sucks all that stuff up and back into liquid. Oh, I was so bummed, because this was going to be, that was an arrogant bastard clone that I did that. And I thought, well, maybe it'll be all right. I'll set it aside for a while. Anyway, I tried many things to fix that, but the nasties, it couldn't fix everything. And so whatever was in there didn't fix that. I've had beers that have been oxidized that I thought I could try and fix, but Brett won't fix oxidation either. There's nothing that can fix oxidation. So if you get oxidation in the beer and it's got that wet cardboardy after, it's history.
It's
you can't
done.
Fix it. You cannot fix it. That's one thing it won't fix. It'll fix a lot of other things, you know, polyphenols, vinyl esters and all that. It'll clean that sort of stuff up, but it will not fix oxidation and some of the other really nasties. And that arrogant bastard by that time. I don't know what it was, but I never could drink it. I was so bummed. But yeah, having to tip a beer out breaks your heart.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. So Todd Earnhardt, who used to be the general manager here, he created or brewed a beer and ended up letting it sit too long in the keg. And it, for some reason, ended up sitting out at the front of the homebrew shop for quite a while. And I came in and I'm trying to, like, you know, is it, this was like right after COVID, you know, I came in a little bit after COVID and he had made this beer before. And of course, as soon as COVID hit, like, we were all in the mindset of just surviving, right? So he had completely forgotten about this beer and had been sitting in this keg for, you know, 2 years. And because we were curious, you know, there were a lot of other, like, fermentation science projects essentially that had been sitting at the front of the homebrew shop. And so we're like, okay, let's pull these and let's taste them. And, you know, who knows, maybe there was a happy accident somewhere. And so we had pulled one of his kegs out that he had specifically brewed. And I think essentially it was like an American wheat ale that he had brewed and then topped it off with some sort of like blonde ale because the wheat wasn't as pronounced as he wanted, or something to that extent. And then, of course, it sat there for 2 years, and it ended up getting some bugs in it, and where it was kind of like spontaneous, not necessarily spontaneous fermentation, but a spontaneous infection, I guess.
Some of those can work.
Yeah, and so we tasted it, and it definitely had Brettanomyces from somewhere. But there was like a nice like Pediococcus like ropiness to it that just was like absolutely beautiful. And we had tasted it completely expecting to dump it. And Todd and I were standing there going,
who knew? Who knew?
This is actually pretty dang good.
Yeah, but you'd never be able to reproduce it. That's part of the problem.
No, we'll never be able to reproduce that. And it was absolutely beautiful. I mean, it was nowhere near what he was originally planning on doing. But it's interesting thinking about, you know, spontaneous infection or spontaneous fermentation or anything like that. But speaking of spontaneous fermentation, is that ever anything that you have looked into doing?
Yeah, I've done it a bit. Not for myself. I do it with a friend of mine. A friend of mine in New Zealand's actually... he's got a pro brewery now. He started out making it in barrels, and he lives out on a farm area, and he did a lot of that, and he started getting barrels, and he goes, look, I got more beer than I can ever drink myself. So he said, I need to start selling some of it. So he got a license and did it. But now he kind of does a lot of that spontaneous fermentation. We've experimented with that when I go back down there quite a bit, and it works out really well. He makes a lot of the lambic style beers.
Mm.
He does a lot of that which is just, in and around him, he's got oak trees, which is a good source of the must in that for a lot of the bacteria, and some fruit trees and some other bits and pieces. So he's got quite a prolific amount of stuff. And so I don't know that I'd try it in the middle of a city, although a lot of the breweries in Belgium, they're right in the middle of a city, and they do spontaneous fermentation
with
smog and God knows what else. So I guess it can happen anywhere, but... I don't know. I tend to try and do a little more control on it. Some of the things about Brett too, when we're talking about that, you have to know what it can and can't do. I mean, one of the things we talked about before was that Brett doesn't make sour beers.
Right.
So people sometimes have the expectation that if I make a Brett beer, it's going to be sour. But it was only sour if you allow the oxygen to get into it. Other than that, it also cleans certain things up. Like, we're mentioning it eats polyphenols, but it also eats esters. So if the isoamyl acetate that is the banana-y sort of thing. I used to make quite a bit of farmhouse ales, and I really like
Hefeweizen?
No, not the Hefes. It was actually the form of farmhouse beer,
Saison?
Saison, yeah. I forgot anyway, I got one that produces an absolutely lovely amount of esters in that when it's fresh. But when you bread it, 6 months later, just about all of that isoamyl acetate is all mitigated. So, but it turns it into something else. And now you've got a little bit of funk.
Mm.
So it mitigates certain flavors and expresses others. So depending on what it is that you're trying to do, you have to be sort of careful. If you like a lot of that, then you can't leave it too long. If you want some of those isoamyl acetates to give you some of those esters that you like in there, then if you add bread to it, it can make it all go away. So
Brett, I have a couple of other questions for you that are more specific to just homebrewers in general. Being the first is, are you a part of a homebrew club?
I'm not, but well, not officially, although I've contaminated half of my mates now and turn them into homebrewers. And I guess that's sort of like a club because I go and help them out with their beers. I keep conscripting people, and when I do, I send them down here to Atlantic Brew Supply to get all their stuff, of course. But no, I'm not a member of a club. But I haven't, I just never seem to have the time.
Well, you should consider it because there are a lot of people a part of local homebrew clubs that could use a lot of the information that you have to give. The homebrew clubs for me have always been an opportunity for me to share my beer and all of that jazz. But in addition to that, like being able to actually taste people's mistakes and like learn from that has been huge. And you know, I feel like they're based off of the information you've just provided me. There's so many people that I could be like, hey, this beer may not be completely far gone. Add some Brett to it.
Absolutely.
Just one add that, Brett.
That's one of the things too, is like, if people are wanting to get into home brewing, they should either go to a club, or if they don't have a club access, the biggest thing is access to someone that has already done it before and knows what they're doing. Yeah. Because if you get into it on your own, you're just going to make all kinds of mistakes, and it can be quite discouraging. Then you might go, oh, this is stupid, I can't do this. And they just give up. Whereas if you are a member of a club, or you know, at least have someone experienced around. So yes, I can vouch for the fact that clubs are really awesome for people, because they give that conduit of being able to have access to either professional brewers and or experienced ones that can say, don't do this or do that. Most of the things is the don't do's.
Nah.
There's so many things you don't do.
Here's what you do, but also here's more important. But you absolutely. So what is a beer specifically that you have made that you're especially proud of?
Well, I don't know.
This beer was damn good. This one's good. I just happened to say so myself.
Well, thank you very much. I kind of keep experimenting. I keep making things that are not coming up to par. Like I've been trying now for about four or five times to make a red. I've got this in my mind. I've got a red ale that I have with a certain malt profile. I just can't match it. I've had it and I can't say, oh, it's this one here. And so then I can find out who made that and how it made. So I keep feeling that I'm heading east in search of a sunset here. So I may have to give up on that, but there's a lot of them. I mean, I like a lot of, I'm especially proud of like really light hoppy ales, because I like to be able to have not just one beer, but lots. And if they're all 10% beers, I can't do that. So I like making a, 4.5% to 5% beer that's still got the body and the flavor. And so when I can churn something like that out, then I like making those. I love farmhouse ales. I really love good saison. Bell saison. That's what I was trying to remember before.
Ah, okay.
I knew it would come to me sooner or later. Sucks getting old. I like those kinds of beers. And you know, there's a lot of different styles. I mean, I love a good Heffy in that as well. Whitbeer is another one that's really interesting. I make a Whitbeer that there's a leaf in New Zealand called Horopito. And in New Zealand, it's called Maori pepper. And I remember thinking that they use coriander, and so you put a little bit of coriander in, and that gives it a little bit of a peppery note, a little bit of spice to it. I could use some Horopito in it. And so I made a wit using Horopito, and instead of putting orange zest into it, I zested some limes and grapefruit. And so a little bit of Horopito, which you can't get here. It's endemic to New Zealand, unfortunately. But someone could send you some. And some lime zest. That one there, I really love that.
You wouldn't happen to know somebody that could send me some, would you?
I have some still that I could give you some if you want it. Again, it's like coriander. You only use in very small quantities.
It sounds like there is a collaboration homebrew could in store be. For could our be. Future.
Absolutely. So, I've still got some long-term. I've got in my cooler here too. I've got some more of... some of those ones that I've been doing in the long-term aging, some of those. And I've.
So can we open one?
We can.
Can we open another?
We can.
I would love that.
Sure, we'll do that. And in those, what I did with those, I got the base tart one down, and then I used, I did three versions of it. I took figs, Kalima figs. And
love me a good fig beer.
When you put the fig, it adds a character. Like it's really interesting. A mouthfeel, and there's an unctuousness that they provide that's just unbelievable. And of course,
it's
the sugar's
like
all
stone fruity, but also not. I mean, that's what I love about figs. I don't know. My grandmother, she has this massive fig tree in her backyard that she's been making fig jam from for the longest time. And so are we going to be open this?
I'm going to use the scissors.
Hey, Matthew, have you got this? Okay, so we're going to open up a bottle of this fig and wine Brettomyces beer. Woo! I just love how easy that is for you. You need to teach me your ways. Because there have been so many times where I've been without a bottle opener that I need to learn that.
It's leverage.
Apparently, like, you make it look so easy. But yeah, so she's been making this fig marmalade or fig jam for the longest time. And my friend and I were looking at making a homebrew with fig in it. And we're going, what can we do with fig? And so obviously our first... our first line of sight in regards to cheers. Our first line of sight cheers. In regards to a style was going to be Belgian, just because, like, typically really follow that fig and, you know, stone fruit style flavor. But man, if figs aren't, and pardon my language, if figs aren't a bitch to work with.
Yeah, the figs, I use dried figs in there. I had to chop them all up, and I chopped these things up all nice and fine and put them in. They add a great deal for it. You can buy, like, the ones I got were just from BJ's. They were Kaluma, and they were 100%. There's no added sugars, no nothing, no preservatives. So I love what they do for it. And then I put soaked some oak chips in some red wine.
Brett, so, holy crap. This is so good.
Sets your chickens free, does it?
Holy cow, this is delicious. It is, the carbonation on it is obviously beautiful, but like the esters in it and the Brettanomyces is refreshing and it's not cloying or any, oh my goodness. This is.
Well, thank you.
I'm going to need a bottle of this like ASAP.
Unfortunately, these are the ones that I'm just about out of now because I've been given a bit of a hammering. So I've got some more that are in it. But
the stone fruit on it, like that fig plays so nicely in it. Like, I'm sorry.
Well, I didn't come up with the fig idea on my own. This was my friend in New Zealand that does this. He's done figs on a lot of his lambic style beers quite a lot.
I can understand why they would work with lambics. I'm sorry. This is just so beautiful. I just have to take a second to like sit here and appreciate it. This is incredible. I have not had a homebrew this good in a very long time.
That's why it's such a wonderful sport.
It is a wonderful sport. And if you haven't, you need to look at the quarterly brew off and the dates that that particular beer would fit within. Style or the
I don't think
style.
There'll be any left by then.
No, save a bottle because I mean, Brett, like, holy cow, I'm sorry, I'm speechless. I am speechless. This beer is so good.
Well, that's one of the other reasons because I started getting a little disillusioned with some of the beers that you could buy out in the wild, as it were, and you're coming around, and so found that, you know, by making it yourself, you can make what you want, what you really like. And that's another thing about homebrewing that's so awesome is like, yeah, you can play with it and make what you like.
Exactly, which is another reason why, you know, I know that I mentioned you entering it into the quarterly brew off, but for me, I'm also like, where would this beer fit within the BJCP style guidelines? And this is where the BJCP style guidelines are an issue. And I specifically spoke about this with Julia Herz with the American Homebrewers Association on the last podcast. She was saying that, you know, I asked her, you know, what is your favorite beer style? And she goes, whatever beer that I make that I like. And essentially, the BJCP style guidelines are there for a reason, right? But if you are looking at the guidelines and you go, none of this is going to scratch my itch. I want to make XYZ. Then make XYZ. You know, the BJCP style guidelines are there for a reason, but also homebrewing is there for a reason. And that reason is to go through and make what you want to make that you feel like is going to taste good.
This would probably just be called.
This is what I want to drink.
This is just kind of fruited other, I guess you would call it. But, you know, my thing was is that when I taste some of these, and you get a lot of Belgian beers that are in this sort of style, or where they've got some tart and they've got some things. They don't usually fruit their beers because fruit's expensive in Belgium.
Yeah.
But of beers like this, I found, well, I can't afford going and paying $40 a bloody bottle for it. which is what they're wanting. So when I'm, you know, that's
right.
another reason why
I would pay $40 a bottle for this. This is that good. Like, it's so hard to find a beer that you get this excited about. And I was talking with my friend Katie about this, you know, when you have been working in the beer industry for so long, and there is a beer that you find that excites you, it's really exciting. And this beer is really exciting for me. I'm sorry. I'll shut up now, but this beer is really good.
I'm going to get all big headed on this.
Can you make it again, please?
That's the
I'll
plan.
Buy a I've case. Got,
well, you know, again, this should be reproducible. You know, once you can get like a base tart that I like, you know, which is again, just a really plain thing with just using some raw wheat. I came in and got some not that long back here. It's like raw wheat and some Pilsner, and then just that's a base, and then just chuck it in there with your lactic acid producing bacteria, and let it sour for a while, and then let it get funky, and then sit it down and then put it on your adjunct. That's when you add your adjuncts is after it's sort of got it at that level. And there you go. Anyone can do it.
Anyone can do it.
Anyone can do
it. This is what is scary. Like, we as homebrewers have the power to make this delicious beer. And the problem is that it takes time to get there. But that's also not a problem, because that's a part of what a hobby is all about, right? Like, getting the experience of getting there, and the experience of learning, and the experience of taking the time to take your creativity and put it into a bottle. And, you know, this is absolutely beautiful. And I am so excited about the fact that you're sitting here sharing this with me, because it means a lot that you would open up a beer that took your time and effort and love and care into.
But that's what, you know, that's what beer is for. It's not for you sitting in a corner and guzzling on your own. It's for sharing with your friends.
Absolutely.
And that's part of that's another part of what's great about homebrewing, is that you get to share stuff that you make with your mates. And then, you know, they go, "You made that? Well, maybe I can make some." And so you get them all interested in it, and then you can drink with their beers. And so it's just it's just a wonderful sport.
So speaking of which, what advice would you give to other people interested in getting into the hobby?
Just do it. You know, but again, find yourself either a club or an experienced brewer to help you out. The equipment's not incredibly expensive, but yes, there's a bit of a cost to it. You don't really homebrew in order to save yourself money, because really at the end of the day, you know, I find I keep spending more and more money on things that I probably didn't need, but I want.
Absolutely.
You know? And so I don't really save. Well, I suppose on a beer like this, if I was to go and try and buy these, I can't. So, but you know, you're not doing it to really save money as such, but to be able to produce things that you like and that your friends like. But do it, because that's really rewarding.
It is absolutely rewarding, especially when there is a piece of art in this glass that I am consuming. That piece of art makes me incredibly happy. And I'm sure that my happiness, you know, goes onto you as well, being the one who created it. I mean, the same can be said for just about any hobby. You know, hobbies inherently are not cheap, but in the grand scheme of things, if it makes you happy, then you're a home brewer. I mean, I've said this before, and I will say it again. When people come up to me and they say, "Kat, this beer didn't turn out quite exactly the way I wanted it to. Will you taste it?" Because I have a educated palate. You know, I say, okay, sure, it didn't hit the mark that you were looking to reach. However, here are my two questions. Did you enjoy making it? And did you enjoy drinking it? And if you can answer yes to both of those questions, then you're a home brewer, you know? And so I think regardless of how delicious a homebrew is that somebody brings to you, it doesn't mean that you can't do the same. And it doesn't mean that when you start out with a recipe and then you finish brewing it and it doesn't turn out the way you liked it, or you wanted it to. The question is, did you like making it? Do you enjoy drinking it? And if you can answer yes to both of those questions, once again, you're a home brewer. You did a done good job.
Yeah, that's right. That's my, I mean, my reds that I've got, I haven't, you know, they weren't what I exactly wanted, but I still like them.
They're absolutely.
Not, they're not drinkable or anything like that. It's just like, damn it, now I've got to try again.
Yeah, right?
Jeez, it means I have to brew again. Oh, gosh.
Oh, no. What a shame. What am I going to do? You asked me to homebrew again. So, Brett, this is my final question for you, and I think it is my absolute favorite question that I ask anybody. If you were a beer, what beer would you be?
I'd be a beer like this, one that's kind of a bit sour, because I can be a bit sour at times. You know, it's effervescent. I can be effervescent. I don't know. Bubbly. I don't know. I like this kind of beer. I would be a beer like this, which is complex because it's got, you know, lactic acid bacteria. So I'd be something that's complex, a bit tart, got a sweet side. Yeah, that's about it. Like that.
I think all of that describes you very well.
Thank you.
Well, Brett, thank you so much for spending your time with me today. I really appreciate all of your insight on all things Brettanomyces and all things bacteria, and more specifically for you sharing the brews that you have spent a lot of time working on and perfecting. And yeah, I am in the presence of a Brettanomyces expert. And I love that.
Well, you know what they say about an expert. X is an unknown quantity and a spurt is a drip under pressure.
Yes, absolutely. And I love that. Yeah, this is just wonderful. I am incredibly content with a fabulous beverage in front of me. And
well, I appreciate you having me. Thanks very much.
Absolutely.
It was fun. It was a lot of fun.
Anyway. Thank you guys so much for listening. I hope that you enjoy the rest of your day, and we shall see you next time.
Cheers.